Yeah, this is the poet Benjamin Zephaniah coming down your radio wire, and you are listening to Sheffield Live on 93.2 FM, my friend.
We're open for business live.
Good morning. It's just after 9 o'clock on Friday the 29th of April 2016. My name's Jamie Veitch. I'm a presenter for the next hour for Sheffield Live's business and social enterprise programme, Business Live. We're broadcasting live on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM and sheffieldlive.org. The show will also be available as a podcast later from the Sheffield Live website. In today's programme, our guests include Jay Bayani of Bayani HR and Employment Law, David Garlovsky of Recovery Insulation and the Solar Active Schools Home Energy Education Project, and Sarah Jane Palmer of Muriel Design. Before we turn to our guests of today, if you missed last week's programme, which featured an apprentice who at 19 years old has already saved Rolls-Royce £10 million, alongside a beer author and interviews from the Get Up to Speed event at Magna, you can catch the programme on the podcast section of the Sheffield Live website. Sheffieldlive.org, find shows, look up Business Live, and you'll find last week's programme. You can also, of course, find a wealth of exciting music on the podcast section of the Sheffield Live website. Quick update then, in terms of what's going on in business and social enterprise, before we turn to our guests today. The Sheffield City Region Local Enterprise Partnership has officially launched a new service to help businesses and social enterprise access advice to help them grow. The SCR Growth Hub is designed to be a single point of contact for all businesses across the 9 local authority areas in the Sheffield City region, from Thorne in the north to Ashbourne in the south, Penistone in the west, Retford in the east. The Growth Hub, which has core funding of £4.8 million, acts as a gateway for businesses to access specialist support in a number of key areas to enable growth, including innovation, exporting, accessing finance and training. And businesses can contact the Growth Hub online or by phone. The launch has followed a pilot project which has already helped over 300 businesses and is part of a national rollout of 39 Growth Hubs across the country. It's working with and will be signposting to industry experts, companies, consultancies, universities, chambers and local authorities. And it's also working with national providers such as Innovate UK, UK Trade and Investment and other business support partners. And through the Growth Hub, businesses may be offered direct support and guidance from one of the Growth Hub's own business growth advisors too. A new report has been published by Social Enterprise UK to evaluate contracts with social value clauses from different commissioning authorities. It builds on learning around the key challenges faced when implementing social value. The piece of work looks at learning from practical implication of the Social Value Act from commissioners in terms of tender decisions, weighting and contract and performance management. If you're running a social enterprise and you're particularly bidding for public sector contracts, then the Social Value Act, of course, applies to you. So it's worth taking a look at socialenterprise.org.uk to read this new report. A Sheffield-headquartered urban regeneration specialist, MJ Gleeson PLC, has agreed a funding package of £40 million with Lloyds Bank to accelerate its growth plans. The business, founded more than 100 years ago, specialises in building affordable housing on brownfield land. It employs over 300 people and has got offices in Sheffield, Wakefield, Bury, Tees Valley and Chesterley Street. And the funding is going to support the company's expansion. Carl Cavers, who's the chief executive of Sheffield-based development studio Sumo Digital, has been named one of the 11 Yorkshire finalists of the EY North of England Entrepreneur of the Year Awards. These 11 Yorkshire entrepreneurs, including Carl, are going to join leaders from 33 other businesses from across the North of England to compete in a North of England final in June at the Lowry Hotel in Manchester. Winners from the regional finals will then go on to vie for the title of EY Entrepreneur of the Year 2016 at a ceremony in London in October. The Power to Change Community Business Fund is now open for applications from community businesses. It's a £10 million fund. It opened this week and an application deadline is the 1st of June. Grants of between £50,000 and £300,000 will be available to community businesses in England.
Details are available at powertochange.org.uk. So don't forget, we always welcome your views on what's going on in business and in social enterprise. If there's a story you think we should cover, if you want to put yourself forward for a guest, if there's a topic you think we should discuss, then please get in touch. You can contact me, Jamie, at sheffieldlive.org. Text 07904 272 200. Find Sheffield Live on Twitter. Find me, Jamie Veitch, on Twitter as well. Whether you're starting or running a business or a social enterprise, whether you're an employer or an employee, we're always keen to hear from you. So let's turn now to our first guest today. And I'm really pleased to have in the studio with me Sarah Jane Palmer of Muriel Design. Sarah, good morning.
Hello.
Thanks very much for coming in today.
That's okay.
So we've asked you in to talk about something called Muriel Motion. And what an amazing idea. Animated wallpaper. When I heard about this, I thought, well, how does that work then? And listeners who are thinking, how does that work? Perhaps you can explain, what is the concept of animated wallpaper?
So what I'm doing is using a combination of traditional printing techniques with a type of printing called lenticular printing. So lenticular technology has been around for quite a long time. But it's always been used in a way, I mean, I'm sure you've all seen the really kitsch images of kittens that turn into puppies.
Yeah.
It's based on that same process. But lenticular technology has become very advanced now. And the frame rate for these prints have gone up to 25 frames, which means that you can create illusions of three dimensions with using this technology. And what I wanted to do was use it to animate my drawings and then embed them into the surface of the wallpapers that I make so that only sections of the pattern will move. And only move when you walk past them. So it's kind of interactive.
So you turn this into wallpaper. You put this on wallpaper. You walk past it and sections move.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to... I'm tempted to say it's almost a bit Edgar Allan Poe-esque, but in a much nicer way.
A bit more Harry Potter.
Yeah, a bit more Harry Potter. Great. Now, this is a superb idea, and you've created a film that actually demonstrates it so that people can really get an idea of how that works. But is it complicated? Is it difficult to produce? Is it costly and expensive?
It is expensive because it's such a time-consuming process, and the design phase is the long time constraint, is when you're working to... So I'm making the animation... I'm pre-planning and designing the pattern, and then I get the animation printed up, and then I print the designs myself in my studio just down the road.
Yep.
So I'm right based in the city centre of Sheffield. So that's the kind of long process, is the process in the preparation. So it's all about the preparation with any kind of printing process, or even, you know, with any lot of other processes, it's all about the preparation. And once the preparation's set up, then it becomes an easier process because you're not having to redesign and remake every time. For example, I have my screen set up now for the pattern that I've already designed with the animated butterflies, and the butterfly animation is done so I can get those reprinted. But the crowdfund is about me trying to get the money so that I can get a collection of designs made, because that's the hard process is that beginning phase.
Absolutely. So you've entered a competition, a funding competition. It's a competition that we've actually mentioned on this programme a couple of weeks ago as well, which is Richard Branson's crowdfunding but also crowd support competition as well, in terms of telling people about what you're doing. Tell us a little bit more about your pitch, and this is the Voom 2016 competition, of course.
Yeah, I wasn't really planning on doing it. I I've just been working on a prototype. I got a £300 small grant from Shoot Enterprise.
So that's Sheffield Hallam University's Sheffield Enterprise.
Yeah, they gave me a small grant as part of Prove It, to prove my idea and test that it would work. I got £300 that paid for the cost of just printing the animations, so it was quite costly just to get those printed. And I just finished the prototype, and then I saw an advert at the train station as I was saying goodbye to a friend of a picture of Richard Branson. And I was looking at him thinking, Ricky, he looks quite old. Is that Richard Branson? And my friend said, oh, that you should check that out. That looks quite interesting. And it just said Voom 2016 on it, hashtag Voom. So I looked it up when I got back to the studio and saw that it was like in 4 days they were going live with this kind of open competition where you could pitch your ideas. So I worked through the weekend filming myself in the studio and making my pitch video, and then got it up just in time to enter the competition. So I didn't really think about it. I didn't talk myself out of it. I didn't have time to. I just did it. And I think that's quite a good... In some ways, it was a good way to do it. But I think in other ways, if you're crowdfunding, it's quite good to prepare.
Yes. Yeah. But sometimes you have to seize an opportunity when you find out about it. And there's a short deadline like that. So it seems to be going pretty well, looking at your pitch. And the way this works is you get voted for as well. So people can fund you, but they can also vote for your project as well. And as of right now, this second, looking at vmbvoom.com and the Muriel Motion pitch, you're in seventh place, which is phenomenally good.
Yep.
Well, high up the rankings. You're also well on the way to reaching your actual crowdfunding target as well.
Yeah.
Now, if you stay high up in the rankings, that's great in terms of working with Branson as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
And if you hit your target, that's great in terms of getting this business idea to fruition.
Yeah.
Superb. So, I suppose as an artist with a passion for pattern, this is just one thing that you do. And you mentioned your studio round the corner. People can actually come and meet you in the studio at a forthcoming open studio event.
That's correct, yes.
Now, what kind of questions do people come and ask you when they come to an open studio event? What are the most common things that people want to know?
Well, funnily enough, this is the first time I've done Open Up Sheffield. So this is the first time I'm opening up my studio through Open Sheffield, Open Up, which is a Yorkshire-wide event.
Have you been into other artists' studios in
I have, I have been to, Yorkshire Art Space when they have their open studios. So I don't know how it's going to be. It's quite exciting. I'm definitely going to be making lots of tea and chatting to people, and I've got lots of work on display. A lot of work for sale as well, a lot of mounted and wrapped prints for sale. And I'm also going to be, you know, talking about the animated wallpaper, which will be on display. I've framed the part of the prototype up, and I've also got some wallpaper hanging, which I'll be working on in the studio whilst people are coming through.
Great stuff. And what you've done so far, as you've explained on the pitch website as well, you've done things on a shoestring budget, as many artists will do. But this funding, and it's a modest amount of funding that you're seeking for the animated wallpaper, is going to make an idea a reality, but also hopefully create a design brand. I can't think of anyone else who's offering animated wallpaper. It's not something I've ever seen before. Is the idea then to scale this up in a very big way?
I think what I'd like to do is maintain a kind of tailor-made and bespoke service of making papers. It would allow me to maintain my creativity as an artist of making wallpapers that are continually evolving rather than me becoming making something that becomes part of a production line.
Yes.
So I'm really interested in creating limited edition prints. So I want to keep them really exclusive and continue to create and innovate new ideas. I've already got some new ideas to add to the animated wallpapers. I went down to the Surface Design Show and discovered that they do a lady who's prototyped LED tape, which can be embedded into paper, which is really exciting. So I want to keep innovating new ideas. I want to keep kind of pushing it, but pushing it forwards, but also maintaining that traditional aesthetic within the surface of the design, and also traditional printing techniques such as flock, gold leaf, embossing, but maintaining that hand-finished quality.
Yes, great stuff. And as a place to work as an artist, how is Sheffield? It's difficult, isn't it, to make a career as an artist. We've talked with artists before. How is Sheffield? What would be the sort of, if you could wave a magic wand for support for artists and creatives, is there anything that you'd wish for?
I don't know. I really love Sheffield, and I think that the way we communicate and the way that's evolving is, I don't think it really matters whereabouts you are in the world. I think it's, you know, the way that you can present yourself on social media, the contacts. I mean, I've got people inquiring from the States who are buying my work over there. I mean, 10 years ago, that wouldn't have happened, you know. So, and I think Sheffield is supportive in that it's, I know a lot of my friends who've gone down to London who are artists trying to make it down there, and it is so hard there too. I mean, it's, in a way, it's even harder. You know, you're a tiny little dot in a massive, like, place. So it's, and you're, you know, the rates are high, studio rates are high. So, I mean, for me, I've got a beautiful self-contained studio in the city centre. There's no way I could afford to have that kind of facility if I was somewhere like London.
So the access to tremendous studio space.
Access to tremendous studio space, networking. Just there's some incredible places to go and drink coffee now in Sheffield, like Tampa Coffee House is incredible. Really great places to go and meet people. And I love the way, I mean, I've been in Sheffield for 15 years and I love the way it is growing and changing and evolving, and it's still got this kind of grassroots edge to it as well, where there's lots of stuff happening. You've just got to go out and find out about those things. And Sheffield's great.
We've talked on the programme about all sorts of initiatives like Sheffield Soup, Petra Kucha, of course.
I just went and saw
you were there last
Sheffield
time.
Soup, yeah.
Brilliant. And Sheffield Social Enterprise Network and so on as well. But you made an interesting point as well, in that technology now allows people to connect all over the world really easily. Someone who's running, say, a crowdfunding campaign, as you are, social media is clearly an important part of that. We've had other businesses, other social enterprises, and other creatives who've crowdfunded on this programme, and they've talked about how important that has been to them. And I think just outside the studio, we're talking about you finding someone who, well, someone finding you thanks to social media, who has just bought £200 worth of rewards through your campaign.
250.
Superb. And that's thanks to social media.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah, so, yeah, Catherine Stockett, author of The Help, which became a film. She's a New York Times best-selling author. I tweeted her and she's bought one of my rewards from my page. So really exciting.
Lovely. Well, tremendous news. So any tips then on how you've built, if you like, a brand, created awareness through Twitter, through social media, to support Muriel and to support this crowdfunding campaign? You know, is there any sort of advice that you could give anyone? Have you figured out what to do?
Oh my gosh, it's I've got a lot of support from Business Sheffield and Shoot Enterprise. So they run Business Sheffield run a workshop in social media, and I attended one of those, and it just broke down. Like, I really didn't understand Twitter. I really didn't understand how the different platforms cross over and how you use those different platforms. And I hadn't heard of Hootsuite, which is where it combines all those platforms together. And so that you're not always on social media, you can program when you want things to go out. So if you were targeting someone you really wanted to tweet someone in America, you need to make sure it's going out at a time when they're likely to see it. So it's like, it's interesting, but anyway, I'd recommend to anyone who wanted to learn more about social media for business to attend one of the workshops at Business Sheffield that they run. I think they run them about four or five a year.
Yes.
You can
Great stuff. Well, we normally flag those up when they're running those, and because they run in different parts of the city as well, and different venues. And of course, we've flagged up today the new growth hub as well. But the website welcometosheffield.co.uk/business is a good place to start in terms of look around there, and then people will be able to find details of when those workshops are taking place. So that's been really, really helpful. And you've had some mentoring and some support from Sheffield Hallam University as well.
Yes, I'm continuing to have mentoring support with them. Business. I have a business advisor, Jo White, who is incredible, not only as a business support, but emotional, because it's quite hard when you're on your own trying to grow a business. It's quite an emotional roller coaster ride at points. It's terrifying and exciting at the same time, and there's a lot of overcoming a lot of fear and barriers that you have to kind of break through when you're doing this. So it's been incredible, and as an ex-student at Sheffield Hallam University, I get 5 years support from graduating, which is phenomenal, including intellectual property advice, accounting advice, PR support from Faye Falk, who is incredible as well. Faye Falk is a PR expert, and she runs mentoring sessions as well. I've learned so much from her about social media as well. Priceless, really. Priceless advice.
Brilliant. Well, amazing. And Jill, of course, has been named the fairy godmother of business support in Sheffield.
She's
been on this programme, as has Faye in the past as well.
Both of them amazing.
Excellent. Now, obviously, you're able to access that support because of the connection with Sheffield Hallam University, and they make that available to people after graduating as well. But you've also flagged up Business Sheffield as well.
Again, incredible.
Brilliant. One common theme of people who come on this programme and talk about achieving their specific business or social enterprise objectives or dream is that they're not afraid to keep on asking for lots and lots of support and advice. So certainly that's the experience with you, Sarah.
Yeah.
Great.
Brilliant.
So just quickly then, you've mentioned your Open Studio event. That's coming up on the 30th of April, 1st and 2nd of May, and the 7th and 8th of May, I think.
That's correct, yes.
And there are details of that on your website.
There is, yes. You can go to my website, muriel-design.co.uk, onto the news page, and there are several links on there that you can find a map as well, so you can find where I am.
Superb, great. So that's muriel-design.co.uk, and then on the news bit of the site, details there. And of course, you're also in this pitching competition, and people can pledge, support you, buy a reward so that you can make this fantastic, wonderful animated wallpaper happen. They can also vote for your project as well.
That's correct.
Details of that are on the Voom website. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's vmbvoom.com, and look up Muriel Motion.
Thank you.
Superb. Well, Sarah Jane Palmer, thank you so much for joining us today, and of course, all the best with the competition.
Thank you very much.
Before we turn to our next guest, we're going to play a quick track of music, and this is one chosen by Sarah. It's from the soundtrack for the film Amelie, and it is Guilty.
We're open for business life.
You're listening to Business Live on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM and sheffieldlive.org with me, Jamie Veitch. And that was a quick track of music chosen by our first studio guest today, Sarah Jane Palmer of Muriel Design. The music was Guilty from the soundtrack to Amelie. Now, before we turn to our next studio guest, David Garlovsky, earlier this week I caught up with Jay Bayani of Bayani HR and Employment Law, because the government's announced a consultation on restrictive clauses. I wanted to find out what they are, how that would affect both employers and employees. So we'll play the interview with Jay now. Okay, so I'm joined now by Jay Bayani of Bayani HR and Employment Law. Jay, good afternoon. Thanks very much for joining me today.
Hello, Jamie.
So welcome back onto the show. And I've asked you on today to talk about a consultation that the government has announced on the removal of constraints on where and how departing employees could work. The government's opened a consultation investigating potentially restricting the use of non-compete clauses that specify how employees can work when they leave a business. Now, I wanted to ask your expert view on this. First of all, a lot of our listeners might not be aware of what non-compete clauses are. What is a non-compete clause?
Well, in its very simplest form, an employer can restrict a departing employee from working for a competitor or from disclosing confidential information or from poaching its customers or employees. So that's the usual nature of the clauses that we see in employment contracts.
And there might be lots of reasons why that's a great idea from the employer's perspective. If you're investing time in training someone, and if someone is working on material that's commercially sensitive and leaves and can then go and take all your clients with them, then that could have a massive impact. But are they fair, though? Are they fair on employees?
Well, it's very difficult to answer that because I think the answer is they are in some circumstances, and I think they're necessary in some circumstances. So, for example, you might have a hairdressing salon who wants to protect its business interests by imposing a restriction on a hairdresser who leaves from taking the whole client book, which is not uncommon. So, to me, as somebody who's running a business, I think that there is an element of protecting your legitimate business interests that the law provides currently and should continue to provide.
So the law can help you protect your interests, and you say the law should continue to enable that. I wonder why then the government is consulting on potentially removing these. It seems that this is something that people feel has been working. But have non-compete clauses been used in a detrimental way? Is that a worry there, do you think?
Yes, I think the driving force behind this is the government's desire to increase entrepreneurship. And their feeling is that it hampers employees' ability to move on, start their own business, or go and join another company freely if they're restricted. In my view, sometimes it's necessary, but I think the government's right to look at the extent to which they're being used. And in some cases, we come across clients who are just using them as a matter of course when they're not always appropriate, and they're not protecting their legitimate business interests. They're simply trying to prevent an employee from ever working again.
Indeed. And so a consultation then can examine how they're being used and whether they're being always used appropriately, and perhaps employers don't necessarily need to panic that they're going to be abolished entirely, potentially. It's more, are they being used in a way that's fit for purpose?
Yeah, I think it's right. I'm not aware of any questioning of this that's happened in the many years of employment law practice that I've had. So I think it's right to ask the questions, and perhaps some clarification and simplification of the clauses might be a good idea. But I'd be very surprised if they were abolished in their entirety.
Great. Okay. Well, thank you very much for your comment on that, Jay. And of course, people can get in touch with you in the normal way. You're on Twitter. They can find you online, your website. Do you want to give out the address?
Yes, it's bayarnilaw.co.uk.
Super. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jamie.
You're listening to Business Live on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM and sheffieldlive.org. My name's Jamie Veitch. That was an interview recorded yesterday with Jay Bayarni of Bayarni HR and Employment Law. Now, in the studio next, we have our next studio guest, David Garlovsky. Good morning, David.
Good morning.
Thanks very much for joining us today. Thanks for coming in.
Well, it's good to see you. You've been with my projects for quite some time.
I have followed your projects with
and
with,
supported
with great
it with
interest.
Your expert advice.
Recovery insulation and Inotherm.
Yes,
it's a fantastic project, Inotherm. And for those who don't know what Inotherm is, it is insulation. Mm. But recovery insulation is the trading arm of what is the charity that you run, Solar Active Schools Home Energy Education Project.
That's
as well.
Right. That's very recent, just the last couple of weeks that happened.
Yeah, indeed. So first of all, for those listeners who don't know of, who haven't heard of you, What's the school's energy education project? Just describe back, that in a nutshell.
Yeah, when I came to Sheffield in 1991, I'm a teacher trainer, but had difficulty getting a job as a science teacher. I won't go into the story of why. It was just it was very anyway. It's they hire their own. It's very much in Sheffield. It was hard. So we started this new project with Jane Leatley way back at Ely City Farm called the Schools and Homes Education Project. We got some government grant, and we basically were focusing on doing energy efficiency projects in schools and homes. And then off that, we rebranded as Solar Active because we got involved in solar energy, renewable energy technologies in the 90s because there's very little resources in schools to teach kids about solar energy.
Now, and it seemed then that for a while, solar was flavour of the month.
Yes.
Feed-in tariffs supported the solar industry in a
big way.
Feed-in tariffs, of course, were removed rather suddenly last year. Is there a future for solar?
Well, it's not only pulling away the feed-in tariffs, but the UK government no longer has an energy efficiency policy because the Green Deal failed. And they have nothing to replace it. And then including government cuts to local authorities, there's no new projects going out. And their interest is very little. It's not in renewable energy technologies. And so it's affected, seriously, my charity. Yeah.
But the flip side of this is that I see, if I look at crowdfunding sites, equity sites, places like Microgenius. There are all sorts of community energy.
There is. There's community energy. There's here in Sheffield, there's a community energy project.
And I was looking at Good Energy the other day, who sell energy to households generated by wind and solar. Now, is the industry just getting on and doing it without what you might call interference from the government?
No, it's interference because there's less investment as a result. Even though it's still viable to do now, there's not much coming back. There's not as big of a payback coming back, so people...
So that stifles innovation.
Yes, it's just stifling innovation across the whole country.
And the project that you have been doing in terms of schools, energy, education, what would you typically go and do? You go and work in a school and workshop?
Initially we went into school... We would do an energy survey and then show them how to save on energy. Like for one of the first schools we worked with was Holt House School quite a few years ago. And we found that we could save, when we did a survey, we found that there was, oddly, during the summer, there was hot water being used. And what it was at the time was they had a kitchen and the hot water vessel had been left on over the summer. But they wouldn't have known that unless we noticed that. You know, we're not liked because we get we're very critical of how people are using. So that's the other issue. It's you're going into a family, a school's a family, and you have to be very careful how you approach that. And then we get into schools. We go into schools, we work directly with children, and then we moved into solar energy, we do solar car challenges. We'll be doing one in the Dearne Valley next month, and, with David Wild, and that's what's exciting. But then because of the local cuts in local authorities, there's less people around to develop those projects.
But you obviously have found it rewarding and exciting to go into schools and do things like, well, as I say... plugging into the sun the solar-powered vehicles.
Vehicles. And it's an educational method I developed where children learn by doing, learn by trial and error. And so we need to value failure, and that's how we succeed. But unfortunately, the system is valuing tests and targets rather than giving children more self-esteem and developing their confidence and willingness to learn.
But looking at the Solar Active website, which is solar-active.com, there's quite a lot of details in terms of workshops for schools, not only on the solar, but also wind turbine, water wheels as well.
That's right.
And even wind generation with a bicycle wheel as well.
That's right. Yeah, these are very powerful outputs, and we have also a small PV off-grid system that I designed it to fit into a large suitcase. I can take on a bus, and it has a little karaoke system, and people can have a way of speaking at an event.
And
and I offer it to Sheffield Live if they ever want to try and solarize their stands.
And other resources on the website, of course, you even have a solar model boat education kit.
That's right.
So and loads of guides there, where the teachers
there's a lot of resources in Netherlands. We do a lot of work in the Netherlands in that area.
Now, when you're in a school, what catches the imagination of the children?
The
most?
Children like to be challenged to think.
Yeah.
And that's what this does. They build the car and they have to make improvements. It's not like a Lego. They have to make it go straight. And they have to work with precision. And that's normally, that's very different than a test.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It's different to doing an exam, isn't
it? Yes, and they get employable skills. They get problem-solving skills as a result.
Great stuff.
And that's what's critical to make them prepared for employment.
Yeah. So then moving back from Solar Active and the work that you've been doing and continue to do in terms of schools and with school children, Innotherm and Recovery Insulation. Recovery Insulation, in effect, the trading arm then recently for Solar Active. Mm. And your innovative recycled cotton or denim insulation product, Innotherm, which is a non-itch, recycled, both thermal
and acoustic
insulation, and of course it's been widely praised with Grand Designs Live, Kevin MacLeod selecting you as an eco innovation green hero. You were a finalist in the London Construction Awards last year, Sheffield Business Awards, and so on. Now the product itself is genuinely innovative, and you were telling me just before we came on air that it's going to be in the Olympics in Rio.
Yes, in Rio. Yeah, it'll be in the NBC broadcasting venue where they interview athletes. It was this is the third time they're using it. They used it in originally in London in 2012, but there were very strict restrictions for anyone who was involved. The 10 sponsors didn't allow anyone else to publicize, even the architects. And then it was shipped to Solshi because it's non-toxic, and they put it in the container, shipped it there. Now they've purchased more to have it in Rio.
So that's tremendous accolade for the product.
Yes.
And, fantastic.
And they have a green policy, and that's why they purchased it, and the NBC Broadcasting Company in the States.
So are we moving towards a low-carbon economy?
We're moving that way. It's positive. In the last couple of months, I've had triple of inquiries. However, 50% of them will drop out often for one reason or another. Often it's price. They don't value low carbon. It's a non-monetary value. They consider it, and they just look to price. But when you look at our embodied energy, the cost of energy, then we're actually saving more than, even though it's a bit more expensive, but it's very competitive with other eco insulations.
So these inquirers that drop off based on price, they're looking at you and they're looking at other products that don't have the eco credentials.
That's right. No, they're not even thinking of that. They're only looking at, they're just thinking of price and performance. Not even, they'll look at performance, but ours is better. We can put in the therm, you can put it in a thinner because it has a better, what's called lambda value, thermal conductivity. So you can put ours in a loft to meet building regulations at 240, whereas in conventional insulation, you have to put 270 thickness. When it was put in Anne's Grove School, they were able to reduce the timbers and save money that way.
So the product itself...
Can
save money in other aspects.
Other aspects, other building aspects, excuse me. The timbers didn't have to be as deep and thick.
Okay, great.
And it's easy to install. No equipment you need. if it's new build.
Well, let's turn then to more of the opportunities and challenges there. But before we do, I think we'll take five. In fact, okay. With a quick music track. We will quite literally take five, because this is a track of music that you've chosen, David. Mm. It's Dave Brubeck, and it is Take Five.
We're open for Business Live.
This is Business Live, Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM and sheffieldlive.org. That was Dave Brubeck, Take Five, chosen by our current studio guest, David Garlovsky. David, welcome back.
Hi.
So we've been talking about the low carbon economy. Now you're freshly back from Edinburgh, where you've been involved in interesting projects, the Wiki House.
Yes, the Fountain Bridge Canal Side Initiative, and they have a small little Wiki House that they have on a site. It's an old site where they used to make rubber, and now they've been given this site, and they have lots of plants that are growing out of containers, and other artisans are making all sorts of innovative and creative projects. One is a sculpture of old pianos that you can play, and children come and play the pianos, because the inside of the pianos that are outside.
Right, okay, so inside out.
Yeah, that's right. And then there's another woman there who's making, does these ceramic mosaics. But what was most creative, always remember, someone threw a stone or a brick at the Wiki House and broke the glass. It shattered, you know, didn't shatter it. But what have they done positively? They've now put a whole beautiful ceramic over it, and you don't longer see the cracked glass. You see this beautiful, and a woman named Ruth.
You see a pattern.
Pattern over it. And the kids were coming up, putting pieces up, gluing them on, and from negative to positive, it was beautiful. And this woman doesn't have any work. She's just there on her own, volunteering. And they must have given her some money from the adhesive, and they broke up some old pottery and the beautiful stuff.
Wow.
I'll be putting it up on my website this weekend, the pictures of that.
And you've been involved in this project.
Yeah, we've donated some insulation.
Yeah.
And it's they've installed our insulation in the Wiki House. And I went up there and gave a talk to people in the area.
Fantastic. How did that go?
Oh, wonderful. Yeah. I really liked Edinburgh. I feel like moving to Scotland as a result.
So on the theme of Wiki House, Sheffield Live's programme My Kind of Place, which is on every Thursday morning at 9 a.m, did a segment on Wiki House this week. That, of course, is available as a podcast if you missed it. You can find it easy on the website. But, David, that must have been fun to do that, to donate some insulation to that. Good project to be involved with.
Yeah. That's all part of being a social enterprise.
Indeed. And being a social enterprise, funding, of course, and finance, and access to appropriate finance.
That's right.
That's cited as one of the biggest barriers to growth for social enterprises.
That's right.
The Social Enterprise UK, in their annual survey, State of Social Enterprise, they find that 65%, I think it is off the top of my head, of social enterprises say that access to appropriate finance is a barrier. Key Fund in Sheffield is an organisation
Very supportive.
You've worked with.
Oh, yeah. We just had a review yesterday, and they're very supportive of us and been with us throughout the whole project.
So in terms of an organisation that can help
enterprises. They're there to help you, and I wouldn't be here without the Key Fund, and Dave Thornett was essential, and a woman named Sarah, and
positive support there.
Positive support.
Great. So moving forward, we've been talking earlier on in the show with Sarah about her existing crowdfunding campaign. Mm-hmm. Now, I understand that this is something that's potentially on the cards for you with Recovery Insulation in a thing.
Yes. Yeah, we need to grow, and we need to grow in a way that will make people more aware of the existence of this low carbon insulation. But also, I got involved because it's a clean insulation. It helps with your air quality rather than the other. And that's the only reason why we got involved. And then there's also educational components. We have a little kit that children make, and they make a little house.
And we have one in the studio.
And we're in the
Listeners
studio.
Sadly can't see it.
Yeah, can't see it. And then
you
put a beaker of water in it with a thermometer, hot water, and you put insulation around it, and then they can do testing. But the crowd, and so there's that as a as a reward. They can get one of these, use one of these little houses in a school.
So it's a kind of watch this space. You'll be launching something soon.
And then there's, I would give a free survey as a reward, energy survey. We would give shares, because recovery installation, even though it's a trading arm, but it's also a share capital. And then there's a discount on insulation. So it's all sorts of different rewards, which I'm still learning about. And I'm actually looking for support to develop that crowdfunding application.
Let's suggest to listeners, watch this space. Take a look at the recovery insulation. Take a look at the InnoTherm website, inno-therm.com, and keep in touch.
Yeah.
David, we're going to have to unfortunately leave it there, but it's been a delight as ever to talk. Thank you ever so much for coming into the studio today. And people can find out more, of course, about you at inno-therm.com. Facebook, Twitter,
we have InnoTherm
and so on.
Yeah,
super.
I just have to learn how to use them.
You've been listening to Business Live on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM and sheffieldlive.org with me, Jamie Veitch. We've been broadcasting live in the studio, and next up on Sheffield Live is our fantastic folk music programme. Thank goodness it's folk. So stay tuned for that. That's on from 10 a.m. through to noon. Thanks for listening. As ever, we'll be back on air next week, and our sound engineer today has been Sangeeta. Thanks to her too. We will play out with a quick bit of Prince, When Doves Cry.
Yeah, this is the poet Benjamin Zephaniah coming down your radio wire, and you are listening to Sheffield Live on 93.2 FM, my friend.
We're open for Business Live.